All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Today is Monday, March 23rd of 2026. Looking ahead here, we had 16 matches of tennis today to go along with 8-game NBA main slate and a single NHL showdown. So it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, I'm one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions, get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So you can tune in any one of those days to get your questions answered. All right. With that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up on the screen here. And we do have a number of questions that came in prior to the show. So we are going to jump into our first question and then just kind of see where things go from there. So first question today, just watched the 318 Office Hours and was curious as to why when using cores, you didn't use the add core function under lineups. I was wondering if when using this tool and you build 50 lineups, for example, do they knock off the bottom 50? Wasn't sure exactly how to use this. Okay, yeah, so add cores is another kind of tool at your disposal. You know, we talked about a couple ways to use a core, one of them being setting the minimum exposures to players to 100%. The other one using the lock icon on the players you want to target. Or the third option that we talked about was you doing a manual group rule where say you have three players and then you add them to this rule and then you set this to use at least three. So those are the three that we talked about. Another option at your disposal is the use core option or the add core button that you mentioned here. The way you would find that or a way to use that, right? And well, first off, I just want to show where the add core button is. So what you would do is you would turn your templates off and then you have like a lineup card like this, right? This is like how it would look. Okay, so I'm going to build some lineups here. So first thing we need to do is we need to build lineups. So let's let these lineups run. All right, lineups are finishing up. And our saber scores are calculating. Okay, so if I click create, or if I open up my lineup pool, for instance, right? And then all the lineups are in this row format. If I go to the settings and then I turn off use compact lineup view, the lineups go into a lineup card and then you see this add core button. So the add core button, what it will do is it will give you a lineup card. So then like, let's say I add a player to this, right? And I add Luka, for instance, to the card. Then what I can do is I can generate lineups from this card, right? So this is again, like another option at your disposal. There's a bunch of different ways. The reason I don't love this one is personally, like it's a little hard to find, you know, if you have use compact lineup view on, you're not going to see it. The other kind of reason I don't love it is that you got to generate lineups first. That's okay. You know, but if you come into the slate with like this idea and like, hey, I want to use these players, it probably makes more sense to just do that first and then build your first set of lineups. I know people are playing DFS different. Maybe you like to look at some lineups and some exposures and then do this. You know, that's okay too. Any of these work, right? Any of these are fine. The other thing is like using this, the add core button, if we go back to like a fresh build, right? Clicking the add core button takes you to a lineup card where you pick your players. You can also do that before the build too, right? If I turn off the templates, the clicking add core gets you to this screen, right? It gets you to the point where you can just click a position, put the player in a position, right? And then you can pick as many as you want. So I think like the big thing for me is I prefer whatever avenue you want to do this, the lineup card, the rules, the minimum exposures, the lock icons, doing this before generating lineups probably saves you like a little bit of time, unless there is a specific reason why you're waiting till after. But you do kind of have to like go and hunt to find like the add core button. So if that's your preferred method, that's totally cool. You're asking me my thoughts, so I'm providing them. But once you do this, right? And for this one, we'll probably go back for this second part of this question. We'll go back to the build two here, where we've already created some lineups. So let's say we create 500 lineups. Okay, now I click add core. What it's going to do is generate an additional X amount of lineups. This is like slightly cut off here. But like, hey, I click into this lineup card. You know, I want to build a team around. I'm just going to pick the top projected player and couple them with the top value player. And I want to build, 50 additional teams around these two players. Okay, I click build lineups. It's going to go kind of back through the same build process here, right? Just generating the additional 50 that we've requested. So we'll let this run. Almost done. All right, getting into the post build. And then now, so our lineups were 525, now they're 575. So it effectively just added those 50 additional lineups to give us more options with those two players. So I can see here that my number of lineups went up by 50. So it isn't taking any away in that instance, but it is adding them. So that is another option at your disposal. If you like that version, that's totally cool. But those are, that is the add core option coupled with the lineup card. All right, next question. With MLB opening day around the corner, can you do a flashback tutorial analyzing a past MLB slate? This will be my first season playing MLB, and I'm trying to figure out how to use flashback to build a winning strategy. Right on. Yeah, opening day is this upcoming Thursday. We're about 3 days out here. Very, very exciting. Salaries are out for both DraftKings and FanDuel, so you can start messing around, building lineups for both sites here, and just trying to get some like initial builds in. So super fun there. As far as what you are doing here, I think you're doing the right thing, right? Hey, I'm new to MLB. I want to see what a winning process looks like, right? So the way I would do that is I would go back to last season And, you know, we'll pick a random day in September. We'll pick a Thursday. You know, it's a Thursday slate. So we're going to pick September 4th here. Looks like there was a five-game slate. And you could probably take this a step further. You know, I think that, let's see. I'm checking how many games are on the opening day slate here. Okay. There are 9 games on the opening day slate. So, like, if you wanted to be hyper-specific, right? Okay, I'm just going to go, like, I'm going to start in September, and then I'm going to start looking for a 9-game slate. And there was one right here, right? So, September 2nd is a 9-game slate. You know, you want to be very specific where, like, hey, this is a 9-game slate, and I'm going to study a 9-game slate, right? I think that makes sense. Okay, cool. So, we go back to this slate, and we go to the contest tab. And what I would do is I would go and study the contest that you're most likely to play, right? So, hey, let's say you are most likely to be playing the $1.20 max, right? The solo shot. Okay, so I'm going to go to the solo shot. I'm going to go to the users tab. So the way I would be studying, especially if I didn't play these slates, is I would be looking at the users who max entered, so entries equals the most, which is 20, sorting by sim ROI specifically here. And then I would be doing a couple of things, right? I think it's going to be worth your time to open the projection section, click the plus icon on a username, and then come in and see what they actually played, right? Hey, what are the most common stacks that they used? Okay, they played mostly 5-2s, 5-3s, 4-4, 5-1-1-1. They did allow 3 stacks into their lineup. So there's no hard cap here for like, hey, use at least 4, use at least 5, right? They're allowing 3 stacks. They're not playing any 2 stacks, but their lineups are heavily correlated, a lot of 5-2s, 5-3s. Okay, good. So we see some stuff on like batting correlations. All right, so we come into the... I think stacking and I think pitchers are probably going to be some of the most important things here, right? So, okay, so how did they handle pitchers in terms of top projection, right? They were slightly over on Webb. They were very over on Yu Darvish. Notice that Darvish is the highest value pitcher by far. I think we're missing an actual score for Darvish here. But I think what matters to me more is that, hey, Darvish's value is far and away higher than any of the other pitchers. And they got a lot of Yu Darvish here. Don't know how he actually did, but I think that, you know, second highest raw projection, highest value, I think there's something to be said there. Okay, cool. So I looked at one user and, you know, maybe I look at 3 users, right, in my contest. I think you can do that. And then I think you can take it a step further and just go and study some of the best players in the lobby, right? And these players are going to be the players probably like maxing out the flagship contest on any given day. So even though this might not be a contest that I'm going to play often, right? Well, I still want to look at how these players are playing, right? And, you know, maybe I do something like this where, okay, I'm going to look at the top sim ROI, yes, but I also want to look at a player who did good. And it looks like the user who won this was the Mish. They are 10th on the sim ROI list. So positive, 10th from the top, but they also won, right? Hey, maybe I want to find some balance there. Okay, let's go and study this player. Go to projections, go to team stacks, stack exposures. Okay, hey, again, a lot of 5-2s, 5 stacks, 5-3s. This user did only play 5 stacks. Hey, they probably set some type of rule that said, hey, you must use at least a 5 stack in every lineup, right? Interesting. But what I'm also curious about is how did they handle you know, the top projected run teams. It seems like San Francisco, far and away, the highest projected runs. They were in Colorado on this day. So what does their exposure look like? Well, their San Francisco exposure is like three times as much as any other team, or except Arizona. Arizona's 15. Arizona is the second highest, right? 36% and then 15. This might be in line with the ownerships. But interesting, I would actually like to see, hey, how many, you know, San Francisco five stacks did they have? And it looks like that a lot. So 35%, 36% San Francisco stacks, about 21% of them are five stacks. So just jamming San Francisco. But it would be interesting, right? If you saw, hey, you know, 36% San Francisco, what if they had a very little five stacks? And what if they had a lot of like two stacks or three stacks, right? That would be kind of interesting. So just trying to chop up this information different ways to see how they handled it is what I would be looking at, trying to see if you can find trends. Hey, this user was also over on Yu Darvish. So I think there's something to be said here about these like high value pitchers, especially when they're like far and away the best kind of value on the slate. This user is actually a little bit lower on Logan Webb than the other user that we looked at here. So I think you can find a lot of interesting kind of situations here and see if you can kind of, part of this is a little bit, you know, you're trying to make sense of what someone else did. You don't know their exact line of thought. This is a little bit easier when you're doing this in the season, right? When this slate, you know, happened yesterday, right? You kind of remember the slate. So like if I were studying this slate, you know, I would be doing this the day after the slate ended, before I start building lineups for the next day's slate, right? So like this slate plays out in the evening, probably in the morning, I spend a little bit of time looking in flashback because the slate is fresh in my mind, right? The pitchers, the games, was there a Coors game? Who was the chalk, right? Where was the ownership? You know, I'm going to be aware of all those things looking at it, you know, right after the slate happened. I'm not muddying any situations with the game that day. So keep that in mind as you go through the season here with your kind of flashback process. But those are the things that I would be paying attention to and trying to think about. All right. Next question. Hello, Andrew. When a player is marked out, his replacement seems to be overweight with a lot of lineups. I usually play 150 lineups on FanDuel, and the player that is in 60 of my lineups usually has a terrible game or doesn't even play. What would you consider doing in this situation? Thank you. Okay. So part of this has to do with like late season NBA, teams tanking, teams not caring about winning, teams caring more about, you know, draft and kind of lottery position. Some of this stuff is really hard to kind of manage, but I think that's where, you know, risk management really becomes a more important factor for kind of the reasons that you're describing. So the first part of the question I want to separate here, saying why when a player is marked out, does his replacement seem to be overweight with a lot of lineups? So there's basically two reasons why this happens. Number one is because the player that is replacing the first player is usually mispriced at that point. So projection, salaries come out, you know, the slates get posted using a pricing algorithm where it basically says, hey, these are the starters. These are the players that we expect to play the most, etc., right? When someone gets ruled out and the team has to put another player in that starting rotation, right? For instance, that new player is officially mispriced at that point because they were priced when the assumption was they weren't going to start, right? So an example, there's actually a good example today. I saw it when we were building lineups. So for Toronto, for today, when we were doing that core example, I noticed this. For Toronto, for today, Sandro Mamu, I'm just going to call him Mamu here, is $3,500 salary, but he is now expected to start because I'm just going to go with, where is he? Jacob Poeltl here is now out. So Poeltl is a center. Mamu is a center. Okay, so Mamu is effectively the backup here. Well, he is now expected to play as much as Poeltl normally would, right? And you could see, hey, Poeltl is $6,000 salary. You know, if DK were to reprice the slate knowing Poeltl is out and Mamu is in, Mamu would probably have a higher salary, right? So Mamu becomes this really high value play because of the usage and the minutes that he is now expected to play. This is why that happens. The second reason that you get so much of this player, especially when the game, when the slate is in progress and the games have already started. This one probably happened yesterday. Is if we go to the main slate, so yesterday, Royce O'Neal was ruled out late in the slate. And then Jordan Goodwin ended up starting, right? So you could probably even see this in terms of like live versus pre-slate ownership. Pre-slate, Goodwin was about 5% owned. In late swap, his ownership went up to about 16%. The main reason for this is because by the time this news broke, there was only one game left. So I think you could only get to like so much Goodwin at all, like basically at that point. But the idea, right, is that, hey, Goodwin is now starting. His salary is lower. You know, this doesn't always work out, right? But the other thing is that not everybody is keeping up with news and late swapping, right? Okay, Goodwin is 16% owned. If we knew he was starting before the slate started, I bet you his ownership is closer to double, right? 30%, 35%, something like that. So the value discount and then the ownership discount is like the reasons that you get so much of these players in late swap. They are advantageous to have. Now, the problem going to the second part of the question here is SaberSim identifies that this player is in a very good spot and it really wants to kind of hammer that spot home, right? Well, these players are players who don't always get this much playing time. Maybe they haven't had a lot of starts. So they might be in a good situation. That doesn't mean they're going to take advantage of the good situation all the time, right? So this part is where kind of risk management comes into play. I think if you are seeing a situation where you are getting a lot of exposure to a player and you are kind of unsure about the rate they are being rostered at, I think it is okay to go in and set a max exposure, right? Hey, I'm going to come in and I'm going to go to Goodwin and I'm going to say I want his max exposure to be less. And you said 60 out of 150 lineups, that is 40%. Maybe I only want him in the most, at most 30% of my lineups, right? So here I set a max exposure of 30 and then I apply that and now I am much more comfortable with the rate that I'm getting this player. That is an okay, totally okay line of thinking. I wouldn't be opposed to doing that at all. I think an important thing for me is whatever player, whoever I'm getting, does their exposure make sense, right? And that is something that I like to think about. Hey, you know, if I go and I look at the values, okay, and we'll look at Vukcevic, right? Okay, he's a center on Washington. I go to Washington, and then I notice here, right, that their normal centers, I mean, I don't think Anthony Davis has even played a game with the Wizards yet, but their normal center, Alexander Sarr, he is out. So, like, this is a player who is out, which is why Vucevic is getting the start. Vucevic obviously had, like, a pretty bad game here, but, you know, I don't think he was in the worst spot there. So, the other thing would be how much leverage you have on this play, right? If you have 40%, but he's 30% owned, well, you're really not that much over the field. So I wouldn't feel too bad, even if this user did bad, because a lot of other lineups in your contest are going to be down the drain as well. So leverage is also a really important thing to factor in when trying to make these risk management decisions. So hopefully that helps. All right, next question. Hello, Andrew. Could you provide some advice on competing in head-to-head DK NBA showdown matchups? When playing against more experienced opponents, I often feel like I may be missing a key step in my evaluation process. I'd appreciate any guidance you can offer. All right, so this is probably something we very sparingly talk about, which is interesting. It makes it interesting. So we'll go over to the showdown for today. And we're just going to pick one. I'm going to pick the Lakers, Pistons, and we're going to go over to a build. So head-to-heads, right, you usually want to play higher projected lineups. So let's say I'm just going to pick I'm going to build the top 20 lineups. I might even increase my minimum salary a little bit. 47,000 seems okay. You want to be a little bit careful with this because sometimes you're going to be in a situation where high-priced players are out. We almost found ourselves in a situation today where both Luka and Cade, the two highest salary players on the slate, were out. Luka was supposed to be suspended one game and they rescinded his 16th technical. So he is actually not suspended, right? So when you come into these showdowns, you know, I usually like to take a quick look at the salaries and see how many high salary players are out. When the high salary players are out, you actually might need to lower minimum as opposed to raising it. But for a head-to-head, I think it's okay here to go ahead and raise the minimum a little bit. This is just something to be cautious and be aware of. I'm not super into setting a lot of filters or rules. I think in a head-to-head, in terms of playing a little bit safer, you could avoid players who have very low minutes to the point where, like, they might not get in the game. Like, okay, yeah, in our Sims, you know, sometimes 5 minutes, you know, Dalton Netsch here plays, right? But I think there's a lot of Sims where he also doesn't, right? And we can confirm that by clicking on his name and seems like 3% of the time, it looks like negative points. Like maybe he comes in and has like a turnover to 26% of the time. He's like right around zero. So I think like 30% of Sims, you know, this player should not be considered really, even though the salary is low here, right? Like Maxi Kleber is like basically always a better option than any of these guys below in a head-to-head format. So what I might do is come in and either set a small projection filter based on my findings here. So projection greater than 4 seems like it'll work. If you have access to detailed stats, you could do this based on minutes. I could say show players with minutes greater than 10, for instance, right? Players that are a little bit more likely to get in the game. Both of these things did the same thing, but if I turn one off, the other would work. So, you know, some just kind of safety, you know, you don't need to get that weird in a head-to-head here. So, okay, I have done a little bit of player pool filtering. I think you could even do some captain filtering too. Something I might consider is coming in, sorting by, say, like 95th percentile, and effectively picking a cutoff where, you know, I might not want to consider anyone below a certain threshold. Like in a head-to-head, you know, I don't think you need to get super weird in terms of like your captain. So I would definitely, I think it's fine to set some type of cutoff. And it looks like the line for me, you know, this isn't always true, right? You got to be careful. But like, there's not one size fits all number, but probably right around Duncan Robinson, you know, his 95th percentile is about 33. Ayton's is about 35, and then it jumps to 37, 41. You know, even if I set this line at like 35, that doesn't even mean I'm going to get, you know, Ayton or Asar or any of these guys. But it's just the point of trying to play like a little bit safer. So, okay, maybe I come in and I set something up where I apply to captains. Show captains with 95th greater than 35. I'm just giving you some ideas here of like how you can kind of set yourself up to make sure you're playing a little bit safer lineups where we filtered our captain pool. We filtered our, you know, utility pool a little bit. I think in a GPP, right, I'd be more willing to consider some of these lower guys in the sake of like being unique and finding an, you know, an upside outcome. But I think, or like even salary relief where you play one of these cheaper captains and you can afford some combination of like higher utility players that does win NBA showdowns. But that wins GPPs, right? We're trying to win a head-to-head. We got to beat one person. So, okay, I've done this. I'm going to make sure I'm using optimizer build mode, and then I'm going to run this, right? So we've made some adjustments, and now we're going to build the top lineups. All right, it's calculating. And even, look, we curated our captain pool, and all 20 of our captains are Luka, right? We could have curated further. It wouldn't have mattered. Right. So here I'm going to create a group. I would not use portfolio diversity. I would not use Saber score. I'm going to use projected score here. I think it's okay to, you know, look at some of these and, you know, maybe even pick your favorite. I think that makes more sense when the projections are close, right? Like, I don't think there's a big difference between lineups 1 and 2 here, 216.4 versus 216. I would, you know, if you look at this, you're like, hey, I like Jake LaRavia much more than I like Kevin Huerter. And that looks like to be the only difference, right? It's Luka captain, Reed, Holland, Jenkins, Duren, and it's a 1v1. It's Huerter versus LaRavia. Hey, I like LaRavia better. You know, okay. You know, I think LaRavia is going to start with Rui Hachimura and Marcus Smart out today. So I want to go with this lineup where I think Huerter is going to come off the bench. Obviously, you would know that before the game started, but let's assume Huerter comes off the bench. Okay, you want to go with the starter. You know, that's totally fine. So make sure, though, when you're making these decisions, these lineups are close. You know, I think that when you start to dip into 214, 213, 212, at those points, you start to sacrifice too much projection, and you might not want to do that. So that would be how I would basically be going about picking a head-to-head NBA showdown cash game lineup. All right, jumping over to YouTube chat. Next question. DRCC said, how are you doing today? I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. How would you attack an NBA $40 single entry contest today? Thanks. Okay, so we talked some GPP. I'm sorry. We talked about head-to-head strategy. Now let's open a new build. We'll talk about GPPs. So let's say I'm playing the $40 single entry, right? Okay, I'm going to go over to contests. And I'm still on the showdown, so we got to get out of there. All right, we're going to go back to the main slate. And I'm going to go to the contest tab. All right, so I'm going to go and find this contest. Mid-range jumper. I'm going to turn on the Sims for this. All right, I'm going to go back to my build here. This contest is medium stakes single entry. I think for the sake of this demonstration, yeah, I think it's totally okay if you want to go in and change the my own source to match the contest you're playing, especially if you're playing one contest. I think that's fine. I'm going to create a group here. So when you're building one lineup, there's not really a reason to use portfolio. We will end up using the contest ROI, but we got to build some lineups first. So in a single entry, I think it's okay to favor a little bit higher projected lineups. I can do that by setting a minimum salary. I can even set a small filter, you know, maybe players with projection over 15. Again, not to say I'm going to get those players, but we're just trying to make sure we're kind of favoriting lineups with a little bit better floor, which makes sense in single entries. We don't need as much upside as, say, a 150 max, so we can play it a little bit safer. All right, so we're going to build 500 lineups here. And we're setting these lineups run. We're at about 350, 400. And looks like lineups are about to finish up. All right, cool. So our sim is running here, right? The contest sim that we manually turned on. And the sim is finished. So what I would do now at this point, right, is still using Uniques 1, and I'm going to go over to my rank buy. I'm going to go to contest sims, and then I'm going to, if you have an entry file uploaded, you can just use the target ROI. I don't have one uploaded for that contest, so I'm just going to use that exact contest's ROI. Now, the way I like to handle this is, say I need one lineup, okay? Maybe I look at the top 10. And I'm going to change my number of lineups to 10 here. I like to do a couple things. Number one is I like to look at the exposures across all 10 lineups. Hey, we're playing a lot of Sheed. We're playing a lot of Mamu. It looks like we're paying down for Sheed and Mamu, and then we're paying up for Wemby. We're getting some Javon Carter here, who's like another value play. Paying up for Scotty Barnes. We're seeing a lot of Toronto and Orlando. Right, I think one thing you can do here is just kind of confirm that it makes sense to be playing these groups. Okay, well, why am I seeing so much Toronto? Right, okay, I go over to Toronto, and then I come in here and I'm like, oh, okay, look, Quickly is out, Poeltl is out, and, you know, these two players open up value elsewhere. There's a value center, and then there's a value point guard, kind of one-for-one match. So we're expecting these two players to start in place of these two others. Okay, that makes sense. Go over to Orlando. Okay, three pretty high salary players, right? 7,600, 6,800, and 5,900 are all out today. So then, yeah, I could see how some value could be opening up there as well. So Builder seems to be kind of handling these situations pretty well. I am more familiar with the slate dynamics at this point because I spent some time looking at them. So now what I might do is I might come in here and I literally might just hand pick a lineup. You know, I'm going to look at either the players and see which ones I like, right? Okay, I'm scrolling and, you know, for whatever reason, I like lineup number 7. Okay, what I could do is I could lock this lineup. And then I come back to the top. I switch the number of lineups from 10. And then I change it to 1. now it's going to prioritize the lineup that I locked. And then I can save it, right? If you don't have opinions, you could take the top lineup that it gives you, you know? You could find a lineup with a certain player that you like. You know, for instance, right, we go back to 10. And let's say, you know, for some reason on this slate, you know, I really like... I really like RJ Barrett. You know, I think that there's value on Toronto. I think he is a player that is going to benefit from that. So, okay, I see here, right, I have three lineups with Barrett. Okay, well, what I could do is I can use the magnifying glass on him. And then it's going to say, okay, hey, you have three lineups with Barrett. There are these three. I can kind of, you know, filter my way down, right? And then I could see what the differences are. What if there's a combination of players you like, right? Okay, I like Barrett and I like Desmond Bane. You know, now I'm down to two, right? If you pick a combo that maybe doesn't exist, right? You can always dip into your pool. You know, I have two lineups left out of 10 with this combo, but what if I add a player that's not in it? Hey, I can go to my pool and see if there's any pool lineups with said combo, right? So you definitely have options at your disposal. At that point, you're just trying to find the lineup that speaks to you, that you're comfortable playing, and that you want to play. All right, next question. Hi, I'm always away from my computer because of work. I'd like to know the easiest way to upload lineups and make late changes on the phone. Yeah, we have a tutorial on exactly how to do that. So if you go to the top right corner, you go to help. I would go to quick how-tos. And we have a video, how to upload lineups to DraftKings using mobile. Mobile is a phone, iPad, etc. here. So I would watch this. This will walk you exactly through how to do that. And I just linked it here in the YouTube chat so you can easily find that. But that is our most comprehensive mobile tutorial. So check that out. All right. Looks like we're all caught up here. Did multiple demos today. MLB Flashback. We did cash games for NBA, and we did single entry GPPs for NBA as well. So good show to get us kicked off for this week. I will see you all tomorrow, Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck.